Welcome to the University of Michigan Press Podcast, a monthly show featuring interviews with University of Michigan Press authors. Grand River and Joy, named after a landmark intersection in Detroit, follows Harry Levine through the intersections of his life and the history of his city. It's a work of fiction set in a world that is anything but fictional, a novel about the intersections between races, classes, and religions exploding in the long, hot summers of Detroit in the 1960s. Grand River and Joy is a powerful and moving exploration of one of the most difficult chapters of Michigan history. Susan Messer's fiction and nonfiction have appeared in numerous publications. She received an Illinois Arts Council Fellowship in Prose, an Illinois Arts Council Literary Award for Creative Nonfiction, and a prize in the Jewish Cultural Writing Competition of the Center for Yiddish Culture. Her story, Remnants Like Dust in Pocket Seams, which is the basis for her novel, won Moment Magazine's 2005 Short Fiction Competition. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
So your book is about a Jewish shopkeeper in a downscale Detroit neighborhood near the time of the 1967 riots. What made you decide to set your novel there and then?
Well, let me just start by saying something about that word riot. My book is divided into 13 chapters, and each one has a one-word title, except for the chapter that's called Riot / Rebellion. And I did that because I wanted to suggest that that what you call something depends on your perspective, and so if you're thinking riot, then you might be thinking a sort of random chaos and thuggery, whereas if you're thinking rebellion, then you you're suggesting a more intentional, maybe politically motivated uprising. And I didn't want to be the one to decide what it was that happened in July of 1967 in Detroit. So with that point made, I'll say that I decided to set my novel there and then for a number of reasons. One, I did grow up in Detroit and in a Jewish family, and my father owned a small business in a mainly black neighborhood. And these are things that powerfully influenced my life. I also, for a long time have been interested in the way that blacks and Jews moved around each other in cities, and the role of the Jewish shop owner and landlord in black neighborhoods. So that was another reason I focused on this era and place and time. It also has to do with where I live now, which is similar to the neighborhood where I lived in Detroit, because it has a wide socioeconomic range living in a fairly small geographic area, and I think certain kinds of tensions grow out of that kind of diversity, and it's something that is a compelling issue to me. And then I guess the last point is that I often wonder what keeps the lid on sometimes and not others. Why aren't people rioting all the time? So that's a question that compelled me to write about this time and place as well.
Okay. Well, why do you think that particular moment was such a powerful point for the city?
Oh, there was so much going on in Detroit at the time and in other urban areas, of course. But in Detroit, we had the development of the highways that were breaking up neighborhoods and giving people the means to cut through the city at record speeds. We had the development of the suburbs. We had a cabal of realtors, bankers, home developers, mortgage brokers, and so on that drove white fear and white flight. So the city was emptying out in some ways, and we had the shift from the civil rights movement to the Black Power movement, and a shift from manufacturing to a service economy. All of these factors had a powerful impact on Detroit's development. And but still, I'm not a scholar or a historian. I was more interested in emotional truth when I began writing this novel. I don't even feel equipped to make an argument about historical causes and effects.
Let's talk about your research. What research did you do about the period and other details readers will find in the book?
Well, I'll say this. I did a lot of research, but I'm going to focus on one aspect of it to answer this question. My main character is named Harry Levine, and a lot of important things happen in the basement of his business. But one of them happens when his boiler breaks down in the middle of a Detroit February night. Somewhere along the line, I realized that a boiler could carry significant metaphorical weight. It's a device in which pressure builds up and where electricity combines with water and gas combines with flame. And so it has all these explosive possibilities that are somehow contained and converted into a gentle warming. I like the aura of this contained danger, which seemed to stand for everything that was happening in Detroit. But to talk about a boiler, I needed to know how a boiler worked and what could go wrong with it. So I found my way to a website called heatinghelp.com. It's an amazing compilation of information and skills and discussion forums. So I decided to place a little note on their discussion forum, which they call The Wall. Novelist needs realistic details about steam boilers. And I described my story and what I kind of wanted to happen. These people just were so forthcoming with information, help, humor. They told me what my story should do. They thanked me for caring about being authentic and accurate. They spurred me on. It was wonderful. For 3 or 4 days, I was laughing my head off because they were so funny, and tearing my hair out because trying to get all the technical details right. So that was a wonderful piece of my research. And I want to just say one thing about the boiler guys at heatinghelp.com, because I probably entered into it myself with a stereotype about what a boiler guy would be like, but it turns out that the man who is the proprietor of this website, his name is Dan Holohan, is a very literary person. He posts a reading list on his website, and if you look at his reading list, you find Tolstoy and Faulkner and Dreiser, Saramago. So it was an eye-opening experience for me in many ways.
So talk about your protagonist, Harry. What does he want in life, and what is holding him back?
Well, I'll start out by saying that I don't want to influence others' view of Harry, and because I think it's time for him to go out in the world and for others to form impressions of him and what he wants. But at the same time, I do have some thoughts about it. So here's what I think. Harry's a person who's really, he doesn't know what he wants, and he's kind of afraid to want anything. And that's a sad thing about him. And there's a sadness and a cautiousness that kind of hovers around him through the whole book, even though he basically has a pretty good life. But he sees life as being about duty and about being a provider for his family. So perhaps he's more risk-averse and cautious than some other people would be, but he does have these glimmering moments and these points in his life when he feels he might throw off the yoke and do something remarkable. And I think those glimmers draw him to the Black Panther list of wants and needs, which he finds in his basement. There's his basement again. It's those strong statements set out in a numbered list that kind of frighten him and fascinate him at the same time. So what holds him back? Well, we could say that it's his father who somewhat intimidated him into joining the family business, or we could say it's his role as provider to his wife and children. But I think there's also something else going on for him, almost a magical thinking idea that if he keeps doing what he's doing, maybe everything else will keep working as it should. He knows that his life and the life of his city perhaps is teetering on some edge, but he has this sense, perhaps, that if he sets a model of being the one completely reliable, predictable human on the planet, then perhaps he can keep things in balance. And seen from this angle, he might have an enormous sense of self-importance and not be such a humble sort of person who doesn't know what he wants.
Why does the book begin on Halloween?
Well, I have many reasons for that. First, Halloween is a time when children can be anything they want, and Harry, as I've said, has a particular problem knowing what he wants. Halloween is also about choosing an identity, and mine is a novel about identities, I think, the multiple identities each of us carries. Harry is a man, he's a Jew, he's a father, a husband, a business owner, a landlord, he's a Detroiter, he's a white man. But all of these identities are questioned or rattled in the course of a novel. And another reason for setting it at Halloween, starting it with Halloween, is from an anthropological perspective. Halloween's a night when norms and rules are suspended. Children roam the streets at night. They go to strangers' doors and make demands. And this novel is set at a time when norms and rules are about to be suspended. And then the final reason is that Halloween has a special significance for Detroiters, or acquired one over the years, which is that because of the night before Halloween, which is referred to as Devil's Night. And when I was a girl growing up in Detroit, Devil's Night was a night for minor mischief, like ringing doorbells and soaping windows. But in the 70s and 80s, it became a night of terrible destruction and arson, and whole buildings and blocks would be aflame. So Halloween became something that was dreaded in Detroit. And so my book, with that knowledge that some readers will have, my book is set in a very innocent time. The people perhaps know their world is teetering, but they have no idea how innocent it still really is.
So what effect are you hoping to evoke with your novel? In an ideal world, what would you want people to say after reading it?
Well, that's very easy to answer. Dan Holohan, the proprietor of HeatingHelp.com, told me that when he finished my book, he sat with it clutched to his chest. And that's about as ideal a world as I can imagine.
That's terrific, Susan. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
And thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the book.
We have been talking with Susan Messer, author of Grand River and Joy. To learn more about our books, please visit us on the web at press.umich.edu. This podcast has been brought to you by the University of Michigan Press, copyright 2008, all rights reserved.